and on the line now I have Padraig Yates, and we're going to talk about the lockout, the 1913. Hello, Padraig, good afternoon, how are you?
Grand, thanks, Noel.
Okay, the anniversary and commemorations are coming up pretty soon, but can you remember, or can remind people exactly what it was? I think most people, maybe when you start talking, will think about Strumpet City or Young Cassidy or a movie or remember was about it as well.
Yeah, I'm probably showing your age now, remembering Young Cassidy. It was good at the time. But yeah, I mean, even Strumpet City now is what, about 30 years old or thereabouts. For the older generation, I suppose people know what the lockout was all about, but certainly for younger people, I'm sure it's a closed book. But basically, Jim Larkin set up the Irish Transport and General Workers Union in Dublin in 1909, and he very rapidly recruited thousands of workers, unskilled and semi-skilled workers, got them much better pay and conditions as a result of strikes on occasion and negotiation on other occasions. And eventually he clashed with one of the biggest and most powerful businessmen in Dublin, mm-hmm. William Martin Murphy, who was the chairman of a tramway company and owned the Imperial Hotel and the Independent Newspaper Group and various other things. And he decided when Larkin tried to recruit his own employees and bring them into the union that it was time to put a stop to all this. And he persuaded the other employers in Dublin to join him in agreeing to issue all their employees with a document which they had to sign saying they weren't members of the transport union, or if they were, they were going to resign immediately, and they would not have anything to do with this terrible organization either. So large numbers of workers who were in the union refused to sign and were locked out, and then members of other unions also refused to sign it, and eventually something like 25,000 people were locked out of their jobs, and when you add on their families and the people laid off, about 100,000 people, about a third of the total population of a city, were effectively deprived of a livelihood.
So are we talking about employment across the board? Because most people just associated maybe with the Docklands or with the coal trade at that time, but it was across the board.
It was. In fact, the Dockers only joined it in October. Not that that wasn't an important development as well, but initially it was Murphy's companies, and then other employers, Jacobs, for example, locked out the transport union members, various firms around the city. It was manufacturing, it was Carter's, it was the coal trade, as you say, it was the building trade. It was everybody was affected by it, and people faced destitution. It probably wouldn't have lasted as long as it did, except that, and they wouldn't have done as well as they did, mm-hmm. except that the British TUC, outraged at what had happened, and particularly the police brutality, on Bloody Sunday, 1913, August 31st, organised huge shipments of food and money and fuel to Dublin. And one of the events we'll be celebrating on September the 27th will be the arrival of the first food ship in Dublin in that year, on that day 100 years ago. Another one, of course, will be Bloody Sunday itself on mm-hmm. August the 31st.
Okay, what date exactly, on what month did the lockout take place?
Well, the lockout it didn't actually start until, what happened was the employees in Murphy's tram company began, served strike notice and took strike action on August the 25th. The lockout proper didn't begin until September the 3rd. That was when 400 companies in the city decided to lock out any members of Larkin's union or anyone who associated mm-hmm. with them, which meant basically anyone who was in a trade union in Dublin, or less. But between those two events, the other thing was Bloody Sunday. It was the first Bloody Sunday in Ireland in the 20th century when the DMP and the RIC, the two police forces in the city, literally battened hundreds of people into the ground. We don't know how many mm-hmm. people were seriously injured, between 400 and 600 mm-hmm. as a result, when Larkin tried to address a meeting in O'Connell Street.
So is this the genesis of the power of the union, or was it? Did it get real quality at that time from the lockout?
You're right. There've always been unions, often for hundreds of years they were illegal in many parts of the world, including mm-hmm. Ireland and Britain, but there've always been unions. But up until Larkin came along, most of the people in unions in Ireland were craft workers, skilled workers, who just followed a fairly narrow vocational sectional interest in improving paying conditions. Larkin was a socialist, and he wanted to bring everybody into unions, and he wanted to improve life for everybody. He wanted a decent health service. He wanted to clear the slums, and all. He was after much more than simply paying conditions, and he revolutionised the movement, and it was really the birth of the modern trade union movement in Ireland.
He was a visionary, really.
He was a visionary.
And that part of him, when they were trying to block him talking to the workers, is it true that he came up the Liffey in a boat?
No, it isn't actually. I know Peter O'Toole did that reenactment in the film. But no, but he did try and get smuggled into what was then the Imperial Hotels, where Cleary's now is, in a coffin. But eventually he got in, he was smuggled in disguised, Countess Markovic and her husband Casimir, who was a stage manager amongst his many other occupations, dressed him up as an elderly gentleman, and one of the Gifford girls went in with him, and she did all the talking because he had such a distinctive voice that if he'd opened his mouth at all, they'd have known who he was. So she smuggled him into the hotel and said he was a Mr. Donnelly and he was very deaf, and she did all the talking, and she got him into the hotel.
Okay, very clever.
So that's how he got in, and the fact it was one of Murphy's establishments, of course, added a bit of a frisson of excitement to the whole event too. I'm sure Murphy wasn't too happy.
Okay, but the commemoration that's taking place now, it's 100 years all through the year. I'm sure some of them be starting earlier than August.
They will. In fact, the seminars beginning straight away. In fact, we had an event up in Glasnevin on January the 30th, but unfortunately, of course, it was the same day that there was a funeral in Dundalk for Gard Donovan, so it was pretty much overshadowed. But there will be other events. There will, for example, be in March the 1st and 2nd, we're launching on the UCC, the University College Cork website, a chronology of the lockouts of it. From then on, anyone who wants to, who has access to a computer or online services, will be able to see what happened day by day. So that's one of the first events. On the 8th and 9th of March, there's going to be an International Women's Day seminar in Liberty Hall in Dublin. So that'll be the next big one, I suppose. On March the 26th, Dublin City Corporation, or Dublin City Council, are launching the One City, One Book, which you do every year, and this year it's going to be Strumpet City, and they'll have a series of talks on that in April. And so it'll roll on through the year. The government have indicated to us that they will have a state commemoration on Bloody Sunday, which actually falls on a Saturday this year. But that'll be the first time, if it goes ahead, ever, that an Irish government acknowledged what happened on Bloody Sunday, or acknowledged the role of the Labour movement and the suffering inflicted on the people of the city in the lockout.
Yeah, I want to ask you about that. But first, give us any website. People want to look up the events that's coming up in the year.
Sure. Well, we're actually overhauling the website and all, but the site to go to at the moment is www.1913committee.ie.
1930committee.ie.
Yeah, and they'll see plenty of stuff on that about the lockout and related events and incidents, and a lot of it I think they find quite interesting. And then we have a separate events page, and we're adding to that as we go along.
Okay. Now, you were talking there about the acknowledgement this year, but have the governments over the years, now we don't name any one, but all the governments over the years, have they been a bit remiss as regards something as historical as this?
Yes, they have. I mean, there's never ever been a state commemoration. There have been commemorations, obviously, the Easter Rising by the government and by other organisations. There have been commemorations for the death of the execution of James Connolly by the Labour Party and by other organisations. But there's never been a state commemoration of Bloody Sunday, which was really... Bloody Sunday really transformed what was a tram strike into a lockout, and also caught attention around the world, in Britain in particular, but other countries as well. And that's why so much help came, and people tried to fight Murphy. That's why, I suppose, the lockout lasted so long. It lasted until January of 1914. It's not like the Easter Rising, which most of the events are concentrated in 6 days. This was spread over 5 months, and there was a lot happened in that period. It wasn't just the strike. Attempts were made to bring children out of the city to be fed and housed elsewhere, and they were stopped by the Catholic Church.
And who's to say it wasn't a catalyst for 1916 as well?
Well, that's true. No doubt it did influence people's attitudes towards Dublin Castle, towards the police force, for example, towards the Irish Party. John Redmond's party had no truck with the strikers. People forget it now, but John Redmond was opposed to votes for women, for example. He didn't want the extension of the British social welfare system or health system to Ireland. He wanted home rule, if it would have been a fairly cheapskate state. Mm-hmm. And there is an argument that, in fact, even though Redmond was consigned to the dustbin of history, a lot of the policies of the Irish Party actually triumphed in the Irish Free State.
Mm-hmm. Okay, but did they celebrate 50 years even?
No, I mean, the trade union movement did, certainly, but no, the states never, to the best of my knowledge, and I'd be happy to be proven wrong, but I'm pretty certain that they have never, ever had a state commemoration of Bloody Sunday and the lockout.
Yeah,
but partly because I suppose it's embarrassing for employers as well, because they did treat the workers appallingly at the time. Many of the things they did were totally indefensible, so they wouldn't be particularly keen to be reminded of.
Yeah, I'm just thinking here, but as you said, I'm showing me age with some of the things I said, but I'm just trying to think back, is there on curriculum in history at all in the schools?
Well, there is. I mean, there is actually a module in the Leaving Cert for the lockout, and also the Irish Congress of Trade Unions, which is the main sponsor, I suppose, of the 1913 committee, along with other major unions like SIPTU and IMPACT and the teachers' unions. They have a Youth Connect programme which goes into about 400 schools, secondary schools around the country, and that's being extended this year. There's going to be a 1913 module to that, and it's also, we hope, going into some primary schools as well, the senior level in primary school.
Mm-hmm. I'm just wondering, me being cynical, is it deliberately... It's not. I am just being facetious and cynical. It's just they don't want to remind people of it too much in case that it spurs people on to do something like that in the climate world.
I mean, a couple of years ago, it looked like ancient history, but now, as you say, in the climate we're in, a lot of the issues are very topical. I mean, we still don't actually have union recognition in this country, collective bargaining. Most other European countries, you have a legal right, if you want to, it's not compulsory, but you have a legal right to join, not just to join a union, you can do that here, but be represented by it. In Ireland, anyone who wants to can join a union, but there's no obligation on an employer to recognise or deal with it. And I think that's one of the reasons why you've seen the decline of the union density, as it's called, in the private sector, and conditions, working conditions there, trailing badly as a result.
Yeah, because you could talk to a lot of employees now, and some of the conditions they're working under. I've talked to quite a few over the past couple of years, and as you say, it's your right to be able to join them, but your employers are not going to recognise it, they're not going to let you, and if they think maybe in an interview that you're that way inclined, you're not going to get employed as well. So it's sort of pulling the teeth out of people's rights in a sense.
It is. Well, one of the things in the programme of government that the Labour Party promised was that there would be legislation to address that in the term of the present government. So this would be a great year to do it. It's 100 years exactly since people first looked for that right. So this would be the ideal time to do it. But there's no legislation appeared so far. So that's one of the things we'll certainly be raising and asking the government to move on, not just a commemoration, but to actually put legislation on the statute book that allows people, if they want, they wish, to be represented by a union.
Well, I hope it does. I know it's going off the subject a little bit, but sort of staying, it's still relevant to the extent. Can somebody, if they're employed, can they subversively join a trade union? And then if they need to, just say, well, okay, listen, I'm in a union. Can they do it without telling the employer?
Oh, they can. I mean, you can go to a union. There's no point going to the Irish Congress of Trade Unions because they're a federation for all the unions. But if you're sort of in the retail trade, for example, you go to Mandate. SIPTU covers pretty well nearly every occupation. In the public service, you have unions, but they don't have a problem because there is recognition there. Mm-hmm. But you have a perfectly legal right to join a trade union. The problem comes, as you say, if you want to go in and look for better paying conditions. Mm-hmm. That's where the problems start. You can use other routes like rights committees commission of service and so on as well, but or the unfair dismissals tribunal if you're sacked. Mm-hmm. The problem with all those things is that if you end up in a tribunal of some sort or in the Labour Court and you don't have a union to represent you, you probably end up getting a lawyer. And what people don't realise, if you get an award from the Labour Court or the Employment Appeals Tribunal, any of these bodies, you have to pay your own legal fees out of that award. And of course, if you don't win your case, you're still stuck with a legal bill. Whereas if you're in a union, the union will represent you, and mm-hmm. all it costs you is your weekly or your monthly sub. Mm-hmm. So that's the advantage. But no, I mean, you can join a union, but you can go into the employer and say, look, I want to be represented by SIPTA or Mandate or whoever. And they can say, well, I'm not interested. Goodbye. There's the door.
Indeed. I think for me, from experience, if you do something like that, it adds extra weight, and you're just able to walk in and say, look, and even though they may fight it or whatever, they still recognise it, and the hairs on the neck stand out for them, as far as I'm concerned, but it takes them to their attention.
In fairness, I mean, there are a lot of good employers, and there are a lot of employers who do recognise unions and are willing to do business. But there is a growing group, partly following this American trend of union-free workplaces that don't want unions and actively mm-hmm. keep them out. But people should have that, and they have that right in Britain. They have it right in Germany, France. There's only three countries in the EU that don't have it. I think the other two are Greece and Malta and Ireland. They're the three where citizens don't have a right to join a union.
Okay, well, I must say it's been fascinating talking to you, Padraig. And, I mean, there's plenty of scope for chatting there as well. But I suppose in this day and age, it's an employer's market, and it makes it very hard for the unions as well.
It is.
Really makes it very hard to work for you. Okay, and people can look up 1913committee.ie, and it's being updated all the time with all the events that's taking place about the commemoration. Listen, great talking to you, Padraig. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you. No. Thank you. Bye-bye.